Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive, and today we have a lot of football talk. Yes, tonight we get the Hall of Fame game, Cardinals and the Cowboys. Football is finally back. But today is also a big day if you're a college football fan, because the first preseason rankings have been released, the Amway Coaches Poll. And number one, to no surprise, is Alabama. Number two, Ohio State. Three, Florida State. And then that takes us into four and five, which is USC, and then Clemson, the defending national champions. We're going to go over the complete top 25. I'll tell you, the conference with the most teams in the top 25, take a guess, it's the SEC. Pac-12, well-represented. Four teams in the Pac-12, including the Utah Utes, who come in at number 25. And then after that, the next two teams in would also be from the Pac-12. So the Pac-12 well-represented in the preseason rankings. We will talk about that on the show today. But the big news, got to go back to this morning. Ryan Tannehill of the Miami Dolphins was injured. Now, since video has surfaced with Tannehill walking, so we're not quite sure to the extent of the injury. However, he did fall awkwardly at practice today, and he left early and had an MRI. Right now, Adam Schefter reports the team is concerned as they await the results of the MRI. He suffered a sprained ACL and MCL in the same knee last season. Fell awkwardly on the sideline while scrambling. Didn't get up. Trainers looked at the left knee, which has a brace on it, before taking him inside. As far as Tannehill goes, again, a video had surfaced with him walking back into team headquarters with just a brace on. So you would hope it's nothing major. The backup is Matt Moore. He took over the first team reps for the remainder of the practice. And then, sources, according to ESPN, Colin Kaepernick's name has already been brought up with the Dolphins front office as a potential insurance plan at the position. Let's be honest. Kaepernick is going to find his way back into the NFL in some point in time, but it's going to happen because of an injury to a quarterback. That's how it's going to happen. Teams want to win. And once you get rolling into the season, you'll sign this guy if you need a quarterback. But I love how Ryan Tannehill goes down to practice and the first thing is, Colin Kaepernick? Is that the guy? You going to sign Kaepernick? Kaepernick's name has definitely been mentioned already. Let's move over to the world of boxing. This is fairly historical and it's fairly significant. Vladimir Klitschko, one of the longest reigning heavyweight champions in the history of the sport, announced his retirement today, ending a 21-year professional career in which he competed in more heavyweight title bouts than anyone. If you are a boxing fan and you're sitting next to a boxing fan who happens to be sitting next to another boxing fan, all three would probably have differing views on the legacy of Vladimir Klitschko and his brother, Vitaly Klitschko. They dominated the heavyweight division for so long that many believe they're to credit for the diminishing contenders and the state of the heavyweight division here in the country. Nobody could compete with these guys. And Klitschko's last bout, this is what's sad. It was on April 29th, sold-out crowd, Wembley Stadium. It was a thrilling fight, but Anthony Joshua wins by knockout. And it marked the second consecutive loss for Klitschko. You go back about a year and a half earlier, and he lost to Tyson Fury in a massive upset. So he ends at 64-5 with 54 KOs. Had the right to an immediate rematch with Joshua, and I thought that's what we would get, especially after the fireworks in the first fight, because he had his moments against the younger, stronger fighter. But that's not going to happen. The rematch would have been November 11th, and it would have taken place in Las Vegas. Hadn't made up his mind if he wanted to get back in the ring. Now he's made it up, and he's done. Became a star in Germany. His fights were spectacles, sold out soccer stadiums. This guy was huge for the heavyweight division outside of the country. And it's the one thing I have to remind boxing fans about all the time. Klitschko may have been boring to you, and the dominance of the heavyweight division came at a time where we were saying goodbye to legends like Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield and Lennox Lewis. But at the same time, he's a future Hall of Famer that did wonders for the sport overseas. So while we haven't had much interest in the heavyweight division here in the States, that's not the case in other parts of the world. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Vladimir and Vitali Klitschko were fantastic. He had a reign of 9 years, 7 months, and 7 days as the second longest heavyweight title tenure, only behind Joe Louis, who held the title for 11 years and 8 months. During that reign, he made 18 consecutive defenses, third most in division history behind only two other legends, Louis and Larry Holmes. That's how dynamic this guy was as a heavyweight boxer. Was stopped in the 10th round back in 1998 to a journeyman, was written off by most, took that loss extremely hard, but then he came back and just completely obliterated the competition. Vladimir Klitschko, surefire Hall of Famer, calling it quits. And maybe here in the States, people start paying a little bit more closer attention to the heavyweight division based on the fact that, yeah, we're up for some parity now. Let's take a look at what's happening in Major League Baseball, because, yes, that is a huge storyline right now as we continue to get down to the final, 50 games of the regular season. Speaking of streaks, the Dodgers had their streak of 53 straight wins when leading at any point in the game broken last night. They took a 1-0 lead over the Braves in the top of the second inning. The Braves then brought in some specialty pitchers. They had a pinch hit home run in the last at bat, and then they ended this record run by baseball's best team, hands down. So the Dodgers had won 53 games after holding the lead at some point in time. 53 straight games. That record's not going to get broken anytime soon, because the Cubs held the previous record, 44, which took place in 1906. That's insane. The Braves had hit 6 pinch hit homers this season. They share that major league lead with San Diego. Their 16 wins in their final at bats also leads the majors. So that streak comes to an end last night for the Dodgers. Speaking of their dominance, if the Dodgers lose to the Braves tonight, they would lose their first series since June 5th. They have not lost a series in nearly 2 months. Dodgers, Braves, tonight at 5:35 is when this one's going to get going. Alex Wood will be on the mound for LA. We take a look at some of the other games in the 5 o'clock hour. We get the Tigers at the Orioles. The Reds will battle the Pirates. The White Sox take on the Red Sox. The Yankees meet up with the Cleveland Indians. That could be a potential ALCS showdown right there. We also get Texas at Minnesota. We get Tampa Bay at Houston. That'll be in the 6 o'clock hour, along with Seattle and Kansas City. 8 o'clock hour, Philly at the Angels. And then the nightcap tonight, it's Oakland at San Francisco. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk local high school football. We're going to be joined by Coach John Famalo of the Emory Spartans, and we'll get an update on the first official week of practice for Emory. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Boscarini with a look at local sports. The Carbon Dino Golf Team has their squad set as they wrapped up tryouts on Monday to prepare for the season, which actually begins on August 8th. Once again, under the direction of Coach Tom King, the Dinos will look to expand on their back-to-back fifth-place finishes in the 3A classification. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Coach Tom King, and he talked about his impressions of tryouts.
I didn't have near as many kids as I thought I would have. As far as my impression, I could tell the kids that came out and played a little bit this summer. I actually had a couple of kids that I cut last year that came back out this year. They definitely improved drastically. As far as my tryouts go, I give it a B. Number of kids, I'd like to see more kids come out.
The Dinos have very little time to prepare for the upcoming season. In fact, the team will hit the course for the very first time on August 8th, which is next Tuesday, as they travel to Fox Hollow Golf Course, the home of Macer Prep.
We're getting ready. We just finished tryouts, and now we've got our team set. Now they're out there practicing today. We start qualifying tomorrow, qualify for 2 days to see who's going to have who's going to be on the team, and then we just got to get ready to go. With this new region, it's going to be a little different. There's a few more schools in this region, so we have a few more tournaments.
Surrounded in a new classification, Carbon is actually one of the bigger teams in 3A. With that being said, one of the front runners to become a state champion this year will be senior Riker Smith. Coach King says he has been grooming Riker for the past 3 years, and he believes that this is the year he claims that title.
He's like a son to me. He always has been. Kind of been grooming him as far as talking to him is from when his ninth grade year and on, that he will be a state champion. I wholeheartedly believe that he'll be a state champion this year.
The Carbon Golf season again will officially get underway on August 8th. The team will play host to their lone home meet on September 7th. You can get a complete schedule of the upcoming season by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We'll stick with the local sports front, but we move over to horseshoes. And this past Saturday, Carbon Rec and International Days played host to their annual tournament. And out of a group of teams, the double squad of Tony Martinez and Andy Sandoval rose to the top to grab the victory. Martinez and Sandoval top second place Josh Eden and Casey Norton to claim the championship, while Russell Morrison and Cameron Phillips, both from Payson, Utah, rounded out the top three. Horseshoe tournaments have been huge in the Castle Country this year, and they will return this Saturday for the Emory County Fair Tournament. Registration will begin at noon, the tournament will begin at 1 p.m., and the cost to participate will be $20 per team. We move to the national sports scene, and it is a very exciting day for college football enthusiasts, as today we'll get a look at the preseason USA Today Top 25 rankings. Now, the Utah Utes, who are a part of the Pac-12 conference, are not expected to be in the top 25, but you will be able to follow the Utes all season long on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM as they march their way through the Pac-12 conference and, of course, their non-conference schedule as well. The Utes have become a staple of sports programming at Castle Country Radio, and again, the season will get underway in just 4 weeks. Make sure you follow the Utah Utes all season long, and we'll discuss the preseason top 25 today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports. Golfers and 5K runners should circle their calendar for August 12th for the Strides and Strokes 4-man scramble and 5K run, which will take place in Ferrin. By participating in this event, you are honoring fallen officers everywhere and helping the families of the officers. Now, the events will get underway at 7 a.m. with the 5K run taking place at the Millsite Golf Course. The cost is $20 per runner. The golf tournament will take place at 9 a.m. The cost is $60 per player. You can receive a discount by participating in both for just $75. To register, contact Cindy Draper at 749-9771. Again, all of the proceeds will go to the Blue Haven Foundation and the 1033 Foundation. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Watch the games, you follow the team, you wear the colors with pride, and you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
It's definitely football season. Tonight, we get the Hall of Fame game of the NFL, the top 25 USA Today coaches poll preseason rankings come out earlier. And we are just a couple of weeks away from the start of the high school football season. In fact, next week, the scrimmage games for both Carbon and Emory will take place on Friday. And so we're really counting down the days. Emory football will make its return to KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM on August 18th as Emory travels to meet the Richfield Wildcats. In the meantime, Emory will prepare for what will be a 9-game regular season schedule before entering that play-in round in Week 10. Joining us right now to talk about the first official week of practice, which started on Monday, we have second-year head coach John Famalo. Coach, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, not a problem. Appreciate having me on, Jordan.
I always look forward to it, Coach. The season is really upon us. I mean, it's amazing how fast the summer has actually gone by. Now we're into the first week of August, and next week we have the Black and Gold game. So this is the first week of official practices, Coach. So how have things gone up to this point?
Actually good. I mean, we had a pretty good summer. We had, you know, quite a few kids show up, and so, you know, started this week, you know, we're probably ahead of schedule for the fact that we had a lot of the same kids participating in the summer and, you know, now in football. So it's not like we're seeing a whole lot of new faces and having to, you know, start from scratch. And so, you know, I think we're probably ahead of the game, if anything, at this point.
As far as the new offense goes, Coach, and you guys switching things up, I mean, has that been difficult, or are you about where you think this team should be trying to grasp new concepts, you know, 2 weeks before the season?
You know, and honestly, it's been difficult, but at the same time, because this is a coaching staff, we're working things out to ourselves. And so, you know, I think, like you say, having camp the end of July and trying to figure out some things that way and then transitioning now into the practices, it's been, you know, I think we're probably, I'm kind of happy where we're at. I wish we were a little bit further ahead. At the same time, it's new and different concepts, but, you know, I think, you know, given a new offense, we, you know, things are rolling along.
It's probably difficult on multiple levels because not only are the players attempting to grasp new concepts and new terminology, but I'm sure the coaches are in the same boat, right? I mean, you guys have been working on this now for months.
Yeah, no, and that's it. So, I mean, again, on paper, everything looks great. Once you get on field and you do timing and other things, then it's, you know, you're having to tweak things and adjust things here and there. And so, you know, that's what we're finding out as a football staff. You know, paper doesn't always necessarily translate when you start running it out there. And so it's been good for us that way to work some things out.
Running the spread, Coach, or at least elements of the spread, at the high school level, there's so much pressure that's put on a quarterback to make sure that he's reading the defense properly when the team lines up. And I mean, is that fair? Is that kind of where the spread offense will either succeed or not necessarily fail, but at least not be as productive as you would envision it? I mean, does a lot of this just fall on Kyson Stilson and making sure that he can read what the opposing team is doing?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's where it comes down to, is our quarterback has to be a pretty smart kid and has to be able to understand concepts. And again, like you talked about, reads and seeing what the defense doing and adjusting that way. But, you know, he's a kid that, you know, kind of sees that type of stuff. And that's what makes it nice, is for the fact that, you know, that's what I try to correlate to him, is, you know, it's just like basketball. It's, you know, taking what the defense gives you and, you know, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but, you know, you're going with percentages at that point, you know. So at that point, you know, I think he's good at that and understands that. And once we start getting that nailed down, you know, I think we'll be just fine.
You guys still have several kids that can't, or multiple kids that can run the ball effectively, at least we hope, right? I mean, that's still going to be a staple of the offense, the ground attack.
Oh, it is. I mean, that's what we have to do that. You know, I don't think it's one of those we're going to air it out. When we talk spread, we're still, I mean, our main bread and butter is, you know, we got to move the ball between the tackles and on the outsides and the edges. And so if you don't do that, you can't throw the ball. So,
how different is it, Coach, when kids start practicing once again, especially for the returners? And again, I can't remember off the top of my head how many underclassmen actually played solid minutes at varsity, but there is a new quarterback and there are new faces. There's new senior leadership. I mean, how long does it take for that to actually, for kids to adjust to that?
You know, it takes a little bit. Like you say, I think that the summer was the telltale of, you know, who's the kids so far as my seniors and even some juniors that are going to step up and help be leaders on this team. And so, you know, we've kind of made that transition. And I think the kids are seeing, okay, hey, it's, you know, it's my senior year and, you know, coaches have some expectations for me. And, you know, you're starting to see some kids step up. And so, you know, I think our summer program is what's designed to get those kids to make that transition easier.
Again, we're joined right now by Coach John Famalo of the Emory Sport and Football Team. Coach, let's flip sides. Let's talk defense here for a moment. Last year, you guys were on point defensively, one of the top teams in the 3A classification on that side of the ball. And in fact, you guys were in several games because of big plays, the big play capability that you had defensively. It's something that I really didn't see a lot of in the 3A classification. We had teams that could prevent teams from scoring, but you guys had big play capability. Is that something that that you see once again this year? And how important is it going to be defensively for you guys to hang with some of these teams in the 3A classification?
You know, that's what we're going to have to hang our hat on this year, Jordan. I mean, we had some, you know, if anything, that's where we have experience coming back. When you got Hoffman, Drake Hoffman, Easton, that's played, you know, 3 years there. Colton Wilson, Gus Garcia, some kids that got some time last year. And so, you know, I think defensively we're way ahead of where we were last year. You know, I think that's where we're going to have to keep ourselves in ball games, is defensively get stops and get ourselves off the field, and then we run ball control on the other end. And so, you know, I think if we can get some kids flying around, which I think we are, I think defensively, you know, I feel good about where we're at defensively.
size-wise, there's obviously a big discrepancy this year for you guys offensively in the trenches. I would assume that that translates on the defensive side of the ball as well, right? I mean, you guys are smaller up front.
You know what? Actually, on the defensive side, we're actually pretty stout. You know, A.C. Reeves, he's, you know, probably a 300-pound kid that can move really well. I think he's going to have a great year. You got Drake as an end. You know, he was as a tackle. I got Landon Fairbanks. He's another kid that's, you know, pushing 300 pounds that can move pretty well. So, you know, I'm hoping, you know, though, that four front four is going to be pretty stout, similar to what we had last year. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily translate to the offensive side because some of those kids, we're getting more athletic kids on the offensive side of the ball on the line. So it's a little bit different, but I think we have some size to kind of shore up there on the defensive end.
Coach, you and I were talking off of the cup about numbers, and this was a conversation we had earlier in the week with Coach Josh Huntsman as well at Carbon High School. Numbers for you guys, you're going to float around that 45 mark. That's a little bit down. I mean, is that just something that I think schools from around the state have to embrace with everything that's going on as far as concussion studies in football? Is that a direct correlation to the decrease in numbers?
It's hard to say. You know, I think where we're at, I can't say that we've had a lot of kids, you know, experiencing, you know, some concussion type things where, you know, that's scaring kids away. I think other kids are making some other choices to do other sports, which, you know, is perfectly fine, because a lot of those kids, you know, when I was growing up, we all played football. So just that mindset of a few different other choices for kids to do sports that way and, you know, not loving football. You know, that's kind of something we're up against. And, you know, when you struggle getting wins, and that's probably been within the last, you know, 5 to 7, 10 years, you know, it's tough to get kids. If you win, kids will come out. And so, and, you know, that's that. We're on that cusp of, you know, we gotta push through that and start winning some ball games or to get some kids excited about football again.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question in high school sports, right? I mean, if you get the kids out, the kids want to come out if you're winning, but the only way you can win is if you get the kids out. So how do you pull that one?
How do you fight that? That's a good question. We talk about it every day as a coaching staff. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the kids that come out and want to play, you know, I'm ready to go to battle with those kids. You know, I just assume, you know, we are what we are. We can wish we had so-and-so and whatnot. But at the end of the day, I've got the kids who want to be there, and we're going to battle and make the most of it.
With the decrease in numbers, Coach, how much emphasis do you have to put on these younger kids for next week's Black and Gold game?
I think that's what a lot of it is. I mean, our Black and Gold game format may be a little bit different than, you know, what people have seen in the past, just because numbers-wise, you know, we may have, you know, our number ones going against the number twos on offense, and then, you know, we may switch it up. And so, but the younger kids, that's a great opportunity to kind of see which kids want to play and who are good and, you know, have a good feel for it. And so, but the older teams are probably going to have a little bit different format in that Black and Gold game.
I know the last time we talked, I asked you how much easier it was going to year two of the head coaching tenure instead of year one, and you said it was tremendously easier. Is that still the case, or is it about what it was like at this time last year?
Like you say, it's. I feel like I have a little bit better grasp on it. The administrative part of it, I can kind of put that behind me as now I know, okay, that's what I have to expect. But at the same time, you know, I still enjoy coaching, and you know, I feel like the concepts and things we're teaching kids are, you know, it's been good that way for me. So I feel like I'm ahead of where I was last year.
Definitely don't want to get too far ahead, Coach, but not that far off. I mean, we're, what, 15 days away from the first game of the season. At what point do you actually start preparing for your opponent, or even going into non-league play? Is that something you stray away from for a while and you just focus on you?
I think we focus on us. I mean, we've got 2 days next week, wrap up practice, you know, this week. And so, you know, I think Richfield will probably come into our radar the week of, you know, and we'll kind of game plan that way. And so, you know, we just got to work out the things that we need to and worry about us these first, you know, next week and a half. And then after that, we concentrate on Richfield and, you know, take them as the games come.
Around this time of the year, people get excited about the season because we've gone so long without football. So you start reading into what other teams have. I don't know if you do that. I mean, obviously, it's my job to do that. But at the same time, you look at the 3A North. How excited are you to compete in this division?
You know, I think there's a few clear favorites in the North when you look at it. But, I mean, in that middle, bottom half, I think it's a toss-up. And so as a coaching staff, we think we have some opportunities if we can steal some wins. And, you know, we might put ourselves in a good position to, you know, have a home game, that playing game. So for us, I think it's just opportunity. And the kids have to look at it as such, is that there's some great opportunities to put yourselves in a good position to, you know, win some ball games.
Between now and that Richfield contest, and we'll end with this, Coach, offensively and defensively, what are aspects that you see you guys have to improve on? Some of the aspects that you look at right now and you say, okay, we got to get better in this realm if we want to compete against Richfield and moving forward.
You know, the biggest thing offensively, we've just got to get our core plays down, you know, that half a dozen to 10 plays. If we can get really good at those concepts, you know, and I think we're starting to roll that way, I think we'll be just fine. Defensively, like I say, I feel good about where we're at, you know. Otherwise, I mean, it's just physicality and the mentality of, hey, we just got to grit and grind, and we just really got to get in shape, because I got a lot of kids playing Ironman football. So that's the biggest focus for me, is get kids in shape, because we're going to have to play four quarters of Ironman football with a lot of kids.
And what's been the most, I guess, pleasantly surprising aspect up to this point?
Just the attitude of the kids, you know, with losing so many seniors, and, you know, there could be a lot of, well, we're this and that, you know. I think the kids are fired up and you know, they're ready for a challenge, and, you know, that's good to see. You know, I don't have that oh, hey, we're not gonna have a chance attitude. I haven't seen that once from any of those kids. They're all willing to step up and battle, and, you know, that's been good to see as a coach.
Coach, it is always fun to talk Emory High School football with you. Again, thank you very much for the time, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Hey, appreciate it, Jordan. Thank you.
Again, that's Coach John Famalo of the Emory Sport and Football Team. Do not forget Emory Richfield, August 18th. We are 15 days away from the start of the high school football season. And again, next week, it's going to be the black and gold game. We'll talk about that in the next week or so. We've got a break for just a moment. When we come back, we will talk college football. The top 25 USA Today coaches poll, the preseason rankings, they were released today. No surprise at the top. Bama won. We have Ohio State 2, Florida State 3. That sets up number 1 versus number 3 to open up the season. We'll talk about that when we return.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Real name, no gimmicks.
That's why I ain't got no gimmicks.
As I mentioned during the intro to the show, the top 25 college football rankings were released today. The preseason USA Today Amway coaches poll. 65 coaches flinging votes around, and to no one's surprise, Alabama's number one. Marks the third time in the past 5 years that Alabama starts off number one in the preseason rankings. That's a long time running. I'll tell you the big surprise for me. I thought, just to create drama, Florida State would get the number 2 ranking. Thought we'd put Saban against Jimbo. Jimbo saying the ACC is the elite conference. Saban saying the SEC is the elite conference. These two go toe-to-toe week one. Not the case. Instead, Urban Meyer and Ohio State coming at number 2. A team that got blasted 31-0 by Clemson last season comes in at number 2. Number 3, it is Florida State. So we get 1 versus 3. So, again, we got a stellar matchup ranking-wise to start off the year between Bama and Florida State. USC, the highest-ranked Pac-12 team at number 4. Clemson, the defending national champions at number 5. Going to be interesting with Clemson. It's going to be weird not seeing Deshaun Watson under center. Penn State comes in at number 6. Washington, another Pac-12 team at 7. Oklahoma, 8. Michigan, 9. Wisconsin, 10. So, breaking that down, the Big Ten, for all this talk of the SEC and the ACC, the Big Ten representing in the top 10 of the preseason coaches poll. Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Wisconsin. 4 out of the top 10 teams are Big Ten. Number 11, Oklahoma State. 12, LSU, followed by Auburn, Stanford, another Pac-12 squad, and then Georgia. 16 through 20 is Florida, Louisville, Miami, Kansas State, West Virginia. 21 through 25, South Florida, VaTech, Texas, Tennessee, and here's the surprise, Utah. I did not think the Utes would get enough votes to start the preseason in the top 25. Glad they did, because they mark the fourth Pac-12 team to get some love in the preseason rankings. Outside of that, you look at others receiving votes. Washington State, who I think is going to be very, very talented this year, just on the outside looking in, 99 points, so they would be number 26. Colorado, who I don't expect a lot from, even though Mike McIntyre is a great, great coach, it's going to be a down year for the Buffs. They would be 27, so the Pac-12 would have the next two teams in. TCU would be 28, Boise State would be 29, Notre Dame would be 30. BYU did receive 10 votes, but that's only 89 behind Washington State, who is number 26, so BYU would be a ways down. They'll have a chance to prove themselves right off of the bat as they take on LSU. So, takeaway from the preseason rankings, and I get it, a lot of it is just for us to talk, right? Gives us something to talk about, which I'm fine with. I love college football. I'm set to go. Rankings come out. I was counting down the minutes this morning where I could see these rankings. They came out at 10 o'clock. To no surprise, the SEC has the most representatives in the top 25. They have six teams. Six teams in the top 25. Tennessee is number 24. They were the sixth squad. But if you look at the top 30, Pac-12 would have just as many representatives as the SEC. The Big 12 has five. The ACC has five. The Big 10 only has four. They don't have a single representative outside of the top 10. All four teams for the Big 10, again, in the top 10. And then the Pac-12 has four. USC is seven. USC is four. Washington is seven. Stanford is 14. And Utah is 25. The only team in the top 25 with no Power 5 conference affiliation is South Florida at number 21. Charlie Strong, first-year head coach, takes over a team that went 11-2 last season. No Power 5 conference affiliation, and they hold the number 21 ranking, according to the preseason polls, which were released today. Definitely no argument for me on who should be number one. I would say it is Alabama. They lost a few key defensive players. If you paid attention to the NFL draft, you remember that. But Jalen Hurts is going to be back. He got better and better as the season went on last year. Bo Scarborough, Calvin Ridley, a lot of offensive potency here for Alabama. They open up the season by going up against Florida State again, and that's DeAndre Francois, quarterback for Florida State. I love the quarterback matchup in that particular contest. But in my mind, yes, Alabama, I believe, is going to be the team to beat this season. Too much potency on offense. Florida State, I'm not as high on Florida State. Offensively, a lot of question marks on that team. Defensively, they're going to be very good, but I just wonder if they're going to have the offensive firepower to keep up with the teams on their schedule within the ACC. Clemson, as I mentioned, not going to have Deshaun Watson. Guy finished second, well, finished in the top three, a finalist for the Heisman two straight years. It's going to be weird not seeing that guy under center. So Clemson's number five. Don't know if it's going to be Kelly Bryant, Zarek Cooper, Hunter Johnson. All of those guys are going to be competing for the quarterback spot. Clemson opens up against Kent State, so I don't think the quarterback battle is going to be settled going into week one. I think two or three of those guys will definitely play in that game against Kent State. USC, they probably have the most well-known quarterback in the country in Sam Darnold. People are just oozing, just drooling over Sam Darnold. Got to remember, USC won eight straight games last year. Had a great win over Penn State in the Rose Bowl, and this was all during the same season in which many pundits were calling for Clay Helton's head. But the top four in the preseason represented by four separate conferences. You got Bama from the SEC, Ohio State from the Big Ten, Florida State from the ACC, and USC from the Pac-12. Big 12 was left out of the top five because Clemson rounds out the top five. A couple of shockers for me in the top 25. Michigan's a little low at number nine. I thought they'd be higher than that. Texas in at number 23. Come on. Yeah, I don't buy that. Texas at number 23 just because Tom Herman's in town. I know there's excitement. That's not a top 25 team. Notre Dame not being in the top 25. We talked about the Irish a lot yesterday because of the passing of Errol Parseghian, and then we started talking about college coaches that are on the hot seat. Notre Dame's not ranked in the top 25. And you know what? Nor should they be. I think they're a top 25 team, and I think last year was an aberration. I believe Notre Dame's going to be a top 15 team this year just based on the strength of the squad offensively. But I also understand why the Irish aren't in the top 25. You can't go 4-8. last season. You have a brand new quarterback. After your quarterback was selected in the second round of the NFL draft, get a new quarterback on a team that went 4-8 when he had an NFL-type talent. You're not going to be a top 25 team in the preseason rankings, but they will be top 25 eventually because they have, what, two, three NFL-type offensive linemen up front. And so now that the rankings are out and the shockers and the conversation, which, again, I think for the most part they got the top 25 right. Placement in that top 10 maybe a little bit off. Again, I like Michigan a little bit more than number 9 in the country. But then you start looking at key games. And right off the bat, Florida State, Alabama. Neutral field. Love the quarterback play in this contest. Do not believe Florida State has the offensive power to hang with Alabama through four quarters. We shall see. I'll tell you the week to circle on the college football calendar. And again, this is always amplified when you get the rankings. September 9th. You definitely want to make sure you're in front of a TV September 9th. There are three standout games. This is the second week of the college football season. Well, third week, technically. But three games that you do not want to miss. Number 8, Oklahoma at number 2, Ohio State. Number 15, Georgia will be at Notre Dame. And then Stanford, number 14, will be at number 4, USC. All three of those games take place September 9th. Rankings will look a little bit different by the time we get to that point. You definitely do not want to miss that week of college football. That's a triple header that you just can't go wrong with. The following week, here's a marquee matchup for you. Texas will travel to USC. It'll be the first time that Texas and SC have shared the field since Vince Young delivered what I say is the best individual performance I think I probably ever have seen on the college football field. Beat USC in the national championship. The first time these two teams have met. And with the hype surrounding Tom Herman, it's going to be his first challenge because Texas opens up with two cream puffs. September 16th, huge matchup. Penn State will take on Ohio State October 28th. That right there has playoff written all over it. Because under James Franklin, Penn State, again, getting a lot of love in the preseason poll at number 6. I don't know if they can maintain that. Ohio State, well, when you got Urban Meyer patrolling your sidelines, you're always going to get the love. They're at number 2. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, you can never go wrong with that game. Again, two teams ranked in the top 15 at the moment. That'll be on November 4th. Florida State at Clemson is going to be on November 11th. And again, I have to see what this Florida State offense is actually going to look like. Because I like Francois a lot. I just don't know what else this team actually has offensively. They're going to be stout defensively. And Clemson, again, it's a team you don't know who's under center. Kind of hard to peg this squad at the moment. And then Alabama, Auburn, Iron Bowl, November 25th. Auburn right now, number 13. SEC always gets a lot of love in the preseason rankings. But that's a quick breakdown of what it looks like. For the Utah Utes, looking at their schedule, again, being 25 in the country is nothing to be upset about. I didn't think the Utes would be ranked. And I'm curious to see if they are when the media polls come out. But looking at their schedule, North Dakota, BYU, San Jose State, Arizona, they don't play their first ranked squad until October 7th, and that's a home game against Stanford, which I think is a favorable matchup. A lot of people saying the Utes are going to win 5 games. They're going to win more than 5 games. Stanford's number 14, but you get it at home. Favorable matchup. This is a daunting, daunting task, though, because the next week you got to travel and take on USC at the Coliseum. That's on October 14th. So there's two ranked opponents. Arizona State after that. Oregon on the road. They're not ranked. UCLA got one vote. Jim Mora on the hot seat. Washington State is at home. At Washington is going to be very difficult. And then again, I don't think I just don't think Colorado is going to be an 8 or 9 win team this year. That's how Utah closes out the season. Two crucial stretches in that Ute schedule, which will either propel them into the top 10 or they're going to fall completely out of the top 25. You get Stanford at home, and then you got to travel to USC the very next week. You get Washington State at home on November 11th, and then you got to travel to Washington the very next week. By far the four toughest games on their schedule, and they have to play two of them back-to-back. That's a daunting task for the Utes. But again, four Pac-12 teams in the preseason top 25. College football is back, and we'll have something to talk about in this regard for days to come as we count down. Again, for me, it's September 2nd. Counting down the days till September 2nd when we get Alabama and Florida State, number one versus number three, to kick things off. We're going to break for just a moment. When we return, we'll stick with some football talk. We'll move over to the NFL. It's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
The Toronto Raptors select. DeMar DeRozan from the University of Southern California.
And gets that to go. What a game DeRozan's having. He's got 29.
DeMar DeRozan, the Toronto Raptors. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscaglini.
NFL football back tonight. Preseason contest. Hall of Fame game. We get the Cowboys and the Cardinals. A lot of people are excited for this. I'll tell you, temper the expectations. It's not going to be great football. In fact, this barely is going to count as a step up from a scrimmage game at camp. But, you know, we've gone so long without football, we're just itching for it. You know, we're going to talk about it tomorrow. But if you're really looking to watch quality football, you're going to see a lot of third, fourth stringers in tonight's contest. Bruce Arians said earlier in the week his starters are going to sit this preseason opener. The Hall of Fame game probably should just be associated with opening week of preseason football. It's not, though. Fact is, we don't get another preseason game for 6 days. And so, how serious do teams actually take this game? Well, like I said, it's going to be on display tonight. Bruce Arians isn't even going to play his starters. He's not even going to play his starters. Not that they're not going to start. They're not going to play. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that when you play in the Hall of Fame game, you have an extra preseason contest. So the Cardinals have 5 preseason games. And there's this talk of limiting preseason, about 2 preseason games, and then we get rolling with the regular season. The Cardinals and the Cowboys get 5 preseason games this year. That's important to mention. So Jason Garrett didn't say that his starters aren't going to play, but his first teamers are going to be on the sidelines tonight. Let's be honest. Even when the Cowboys have had the traditional 4 preseason game schedule, Jason Garrett always plays it safe in the first month. Tony Romo, Jason Witten, those guys have not suited up for the first preseason game since like 2012. Tyrone Smith, he set out the opener a year ago. So Jerry Jones said this week that Jalen Smith continues to work his way back. He's unlikely to make his debut tonight. So I don't know what you're watching tonight other than the fact you got that nerving itch for some football. I'll tell you the one storyline to watch in tonight's game. It's Blaine Gabbert. 10th overall pick back in 2011. Did not work out in Jacksonville. Combined to play 13 games for San Francisco over the past 2 years. And outside of that 28-0 win over the Rams last year in week one, it was a colossal dumpster fire for him. And so now he's in Arizona trying to revive his career. That's, I guess, somewhat of an interesting storyline. I mean, you got Carson Palmer, you got Drew Stanton. Can Blaine Gabbert make the squad? Probably. But they're rapidly approaching a crossroad at quarterback because Carson Palmer's 37 years old, got a contract that expires after 2018, and he's expendable. So who do you have to fill in for Carson Palmer? Again, he's 37 years old. Backup quarterback story tonight for me in Arizona is probably the storyline to watch because in the NFC West, you have the Cardinals, you have the Seahawks, then you got the Rams and the 49ers. So you have 2 teams duking it out at the top of that division with the Rams and Niners really lagging behind the rest. To me, that's probably the most interesting storyline in tonight's game. Kickoff is set for 6 p.m. Yes, we'll talk about this game on the show tomorrow. We're also going to talk some NBA basketball. It's a dead time for the NBA, but we'll jump in, talk some chit-chat on the NBA tomorrow as well. I have to thank Coach John Famalo for taking out the time to join us on the show. Always a pleasure to get an update on what's happening with the Emory High School Spartans. Do not forget, Emory High football returns to KOAL August 18th. They take on the Richfield Wildcats on the road. Myself alongside Chris Winfrey will bring you the play-by-play call. It's that time of the year again, 5 days away from the first girls soccer game and also 5 days away from the first golf meet for Carbon High. You see, fall sports, it's here. Out of time on this edition of the show. The Michael Medved program is coming up following ABC News right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Be safe. I am out.